Finally, it's part two to this two-part exploration of the evolution of the remix. If you haven't already, I want you to pause and go back to part one before you jump onto this, as we'll add context for all the information I'll be talking about in this episode. Just a quick recap on part one, I covered the origins and the early years of the remix. In this episode, I'll be walking you through how the remix made it into the mainstream and how it subsequently became what it is now. This leads to the first question at hand. When did remixes make their way into the mainstream? My findings brought my attention to New York-born music composer Patrick Cowley. Cowley was responsible for the remix of Donna Summer's 1997 single, I Feel Love, which became one of the first remixes to see commercial success in the music charts. Now, it's not like Cowley did something completely different. He took the blueprints of other selectors and DJs did at the time. He took the 5-minute song and extended it to 15 minutes. He also included loops and newly overly dubbed synthesizers. The song became an instant hit, especially for underground collectors. An edited 7-minute version hit the 21st spot on the UK singles chart that year. With the rise of dance music in the late 80s, the remix format actually began to take a different shape, to which selectors and DJs at the time would keep artists' vocals while completely flipping the instrumentals, giving it a more house music vibe. Up until that point, it wasn't done before. The music, which involved the vocals and instrumentals, was chopped and rearranged as per the selector's decision, depending on what they wanted to recreate. Chi-Town DJ Jesse Saunders, who is also known as the originator of house music, was reported to be the first producer to introduce this new way of remixing music and by making the song his own. He debuted this style with Club Novio's 1988 song, It's a Cold, Cold World. Another famous DJ to follow this style was fellow Chicago house DJ Steve Silk Hurley. When the 90s rolled around, early tech and access to computers that had audio capabilities birthed a new generation of creatives who could compile their own unofficial remixes to their favorite songs by mixing two or more songs together. They were called the underground remixes. And being an underground remixer at the time wasn't easy, especially compared to more commercially known selectors and remix DJs, and this was because trying to get clean copies of separate tracks such as vocals or instrumentals wasn't really made public to the general public. It was also well known that DJs and other artists at the time actually didn't like underground remixes. These artists include Blorg and Public Enemy, but there were other artists such as Erasure that allowed and encouraged these underground remixes to reimagine their songs without the restrictions. The advancement of technology in the past couple of decades has made remixing a whole lot easier, which is a partial reason to its rising popularity, but also allowed for artists to take full advantage of sampling instruments from other artists, which is a positive in terms of the creative realm when reimagining a sound for a different beat or different purpose, but also comes with this negative side, such as legal disputes over said samples. Some notable examples will be Jay-Z's sample on his 1998 hit single, Big Pimpin', which actually landed him in court by the nephew of the original composer, who felt that although Jay was legally allowed to use the sample, morally he had no right to use the sound. A more recent case was Ariana Grande's 2019 smash hit, Seven Rings. New York rapper Dot felt that Grande's song was a riff from his song, You Need It, I Got It, which came before Ari's track. Although Ari credits her team for having used the song My Favorite Things from the Oscar and Tony-winning film The Sound of Music as an inspiration, the parties involved managed to reach a settlement out of court. Here are a few honorable mentions of remix albums over the years. Madonna, You Can Dance, released in 1987. Janet Jackson's Janet Remixed, released in 1995. Jennifer Lopez, J to That L-O, released 2002. Mariah Carey, The Remixes, released in 2003, and Dua Lipa's Club Future Nostalgia, released in 2020. So we've reached the end of the historical aspect of the remix, now more so as to why I chose that topic at hand, and of course, the culprit behind it is none other than Twitter. I was actually on the timeline just scrolling through a random day, and one of like the fan accounts that usually will pop up on my timeline here and there was talking about like how remixes aren't the same anymore, and they made reference to Mariah Carey's, you know, remix of Heartbreaker that she did with Missy Elliott and DeBrat at the time. I believe the year was 2001, somewhere around that era, and it's part of the actual remix you can be found in her remix compilation album that she released a few years later. And it was interesting to hear how she had reworked the sound, but it was nothing new. Obviously, I As a Lamb, which is her, I think, fandom name, basically know of what has happened before, you know, her being the pioneer of, you know, this bridge between pop or R&B music with hip hop, because before 1995, it wasn't really done. And she came out with the Fantasy remix. Fantasy was already a number one hit on the radios. Everyone loved it. It was like that song that you heard. And she decided to get together with ODB from the Wu-Tang Clan. If you don't know who ODB is, it's Old Dirty Bastard. They got together for the song, and it was a hit in the summer of 1995 at the time. And so from then on, which kind of worked with other producers such as P. Diddy and Bad Boy Records, and was able to move through with the music and really pioneer for more younger artists to collaborate with more hip-hop artists, just to kind of sonically give it a different sound and a different feel to the music. And it's what we're so used to now. We're hearing it almost every second day, that, you know, our favorites are getting together for a remix or for a collab, and that is thanks to her. But sonically, when it came to the actual aspect of the remix, you know, I was so adamant that, you know, Billboard and the mainstream killed the remix, it killed the remix. But they didn't. They did put restrictions on it, where there were a lot of restrictions with music at the time, let me say that. But with the remix, your remix basically had to sound like the original song for it to go with the numbers. Because, you know, it's a numbers game in the music industry. So if you're looking at sales, your remix has to sound like the original for both of them to count as one. If it sonically sounds different, or vocally sounds different from what the original is, to the point where it doesn't even sound like the actual song that came before it, it is classified as a new song. And that back and forth, you know, fans are always just like, remixes aren't the same, it's not the same. Technically it is. Remixes haven't really changed. Yes, the early days of the remix, if you've heard from like part one, came from Jamaica, made their way to the States, and kind of progressed to what it is now. But remixes kind of belong to selectors and DJs. They're the ones that pioneered it, and they're the ones that really do remixes more for the club scene, or the disco scene at the time, now like the dance club scene, something for you to get up and dance to. They rearrange the vocals and rearrange the sound for you to be able to dance to that music, no matter how sad the message behind the song is. Just like with Tom's Diner, an episode that I'd done prior, where, you know, originally the song was such a sad and somber song, but DNA, which is a British group at the time, was able to completely flip it and became the chart-topping song that it was, and for that particular dance scene. So really, when you think about it, when artists do remixes, they're not really doing a lot in terms of the remixes. They are still doing that blueprint that was there before, which is adding a new vocal, taking away vocals, and producing the song as is. Tamia's So Into You is a perfect example. She released that song first. It was a hit. Then Fabulous came through a couple of years later and was like, yo, I also want to hop on the song real quick. And he became a Fabulous featuring Tamia. But really, sonically, the song sounds exactly the same. It's just that Fabulous has his verses on it. Tamia comes through and sings the chorus and probably has like a verse or two in there as well. But technically, the song isn't new. It was just a new artist coming through, adding his own bit of flavor into it. And because he's credited as the main person, and the person that created the song is credited as the feature, it almost became like this new song, when really it wasn't too much of a new song. If you hear what I'm saying, it's kind of taken from a different perspective in that regard. And I guess you can call that a remix, but it's nothing drastically different. I gotta give credit where credit is due with Miss Jennifer Lopez. You know, there's a bit of a love-hate relationship with J-Lo. Some people love her, some people hate her. She's mainly called an industry plant, which is a topic for another day. There's just so much to unpack when it comes to industry plants. But one thing I'll give her some credit for is on her remix album, she slapped with two songs. two songs, Ain't It Funny and I'm Real. Now, if those sound familiar to you, it's because she's released them as actual singles. And what's interesting is that in her previous albums, Ain't It Funny and I'm Real sound completely different to what the remixes sound like. The remixes sound so different. One, yes, Ja Rule is featured on it. These are Murder remixes done by Murder Inc., which was Ja Rule's like label at the time. But also just sonically is such a different song. The beat is different. The lyrics is different. They are different songs. And that charted better than the original songs. People actually know the remixes a whole lot more and a whole lot better than the actual like original songs. And I think she did that on purpose. Why she did it on purpose, I think it was a big like middle finger to the music industry for like their biased rules and kind of keeping artists restricted. I think she just wanted to go in a different direction. And though a remix album isn't necessarily like a proper album that, you know, artists put time and effort into it, they kind of allow people in their camp or different camps to really reinvent the song instrumentally, and then they can just compile it and release it out to, you know, the mass media almost as a filler for the next era to come. Or if they feel like they're having a musical block but they kind of want to put music out there for the fans, they will release compilation albums or maybe unreleased music or, you know, remixed music. It's nothing new, it's nothing major. Not a lot of artists do it, but artists do put out fuller albums or fuller EPs just to kind of put, you know, something out there for the fans, not necessarily for the success or for the whatever, but maybe because they're going through a block or they're transitioning into a new era, but they don't want to leave too much time in between doing like nothing or having no music whatsoever. So they'll put out things like that. So for J-Lo to kind of redo two songs completely and release it to the media was a big... Ooh, she was low-key shooting herself in the foot because it could have gone to one of two ways. But she took that risk and I think it really worked out for her. And I think when it came to remixes, some people will remember that and be like, oh, but Jennifer Lopez did it and she called it a remix, therefore that's what remixes should be. When technically not, she broke the rules of the remix by creating a new song that didn't sound anything like the original. So she did do a remix, but was it really a remix? Was she really remaking the song, or she just gave it, just redid a whole song and basically slapped the same title track in it just to gain traction to that new song? You know, that's only something J-Lo will know. I don't know it. I can't speak too much on it, but it's something that I observed, which was quite interesting. In terms of that, just remixes in general, I think going into this thing, I thought I had an idea of what they were. Might I tell you that I did not. I actually knew very little in a bigger map of something that we take for granted. That when we almost bash remixes, like, oh my gosh, why does it sound like this? They shouldn't have done it. There's a lot of work that goes behind it. And I think the true, like, people that deserve the praise aren't the artists, but rather the DJs and selectors back in the days that actually pioneered this movement of remixes. Had it not been for remixes, I don't think the club scenes would be as hot as they are, you know? Even DJs of these days, you'll find certain DJs that will like rework a song and flip it and reverse it. We've seen a couple of those DJs going really, really viral on Twitter or TikTok or all these apps that we consume. I'm just there like, yeah, that's true DJing right there. Not a lot of artists... Not a lot of mainstream DJs do that, but a lot of underground DJs do that. So if you're looking for something that reminds you of what a true remix should be, quote, like in quotation marks, then go for the underground DJs. Go and listen to your SoundClouds. That's where you'll really find those up-and-coming DJs really doing what remixes are supposed to do. That officially brings me to the end of this two-part series on the evolution of the remix. I hope you enjoyed listening to it just as much as I enjoyed researching this and presenting it to you. It was a long topic at hand. I really didn't expect so much to come from it, but it was a very interesting journey to take, and I appreciate the art of remixing a whole lot more after all of this. And I hope that you can take a little something out of this just when you hear a remix playing on the radio, playing on your Spotify playlist, Apple Music playlist, wherever you stream your music from, and have a deeper appreciation to the art behind it, because there's such a long history attached to it. Thank you so much for listening. do watch out for the next episode that will be coming by soon. I don't know when yet, but soon there will be another one. I'm very excited to cover up on this because I don't think anyone really knows too much on whom I will be talking about and what I'll be talking about. So it'll be very interesting to introduce you to a little something, something. If you know it, great. If you don't, hope you're able to take something out of it. Do follow me on the socials for more, to keep up with me and know when the next episode will be out. See you later. This has been The Vault.